Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Head Office, the Socialist Party of Great Britain. It's a beautiful afternoon, and it's great to see quite a few people. A great pleasure in introducing Brian Morris, who is Emeritus Professor of Anthropology at Goldsmiths College, University of London. Brian will speak for about 45 minutes, thereabouts, and then we'll open it up for questions and discussion. So, Brian?
Okay, yeah. I find it much easier standing up, actually, if you don't mind, and wandering around. Anyway, it's very, very nice to be invited back again. I'd like to just make a couple of apologies, really, in a sense, apologies. One is I'm a bit of a maverick, really. In fact, a lot of my friends don't consider me a real anthropologist, because old Aristotle was once described, because, old Aristotle was a philosopher, but he was also interested in squids, and dolphins and things like that. And his contemporaries accused Aristotle as being like a jackdaw. He was just interested in lots and lots of things, collecting up things like that. And I'm afraid I'm a bit like Aristotle. I'm a bit of a jackdaw. I'm interested in lots and lots of different things. And a lot of my friends say, I'm not a real anthropologist, as it were, Because over the last few years, I've written books on insects, religion, Jeffreys, all different kind of interests. So I've got lots and lots of interests. So my first apology is, I can't pretend that I'm a kind of, I know a lot about Marxist scholarship, really. I don't consider myself, au fait with the complete. And in fact, some of you probably know a lot more about Marx than I do. So that's the first apology. The second apology is actually, so things are a bit odd, actually coming to the Socialist Party and to give people a talk on Marx, And before Margaret Thatcher, it would, there's that English expression, taking coals to Newcastle, So in a way, my second apologies, it seems a bit like I'm taking coals to Newcastle, really, and in that sort of sense. But I apologise, because what I want to try and do is to suggest to looking at Marx in a kind of, in a different way, looking at Marx as an anthropologist, actually. And it's always odd, because Dave said to me, I never thought about Marx being an anthropologist. But I want to talk to you just to try and give you some idea why I think not only Marx was an anthropologist, actually he was one of the pioneers, he's one of the ancestral figures, really, of anthropology as a discipline. Although most anthropologists won't recognise this, but he's a real thing. I just went along the corner shop there to look around the book, and I came across a book by Kolakowski, and it's entitled, it's up there, Is God Happy? And I thought, gee, this is a chap who a few years ago was a very radical Marxist, and he wrote a book on the history of Marxism, Kolakowski. And what was interesting about that history of Kolakowski, it's three volumes. The first volume starts off with a phrase, Karl Marx was a German philosopher. That's it. So he looks at things philosopher. And in a sense, Marx was a bit of a philosopher. He was a bit of a philosopher in a way. I mean, he studied philosophy when he was a young, in his 20s. He studied philosophy in Berlin. He was very keen on philosophy. He had a real passion. He had a real passion for German philosophy, particularly Hegel. He really was. But in many ways, I think, Marx, he was a philosopher. He was an odd sort of philosopher in the sense he was a bit of an anti-philosopher. Because he got the idea that, you couldn't understand the world purely through reason and speculation and kind of in contemplative ways. The only way you could understand the world was to get involved in it empirically, practically, But normally, Marx is often seen, he's often seen as a kind of political journalist. He's often seen as a kind of, basically as an economist. Of course, as you all know, he's really seen essentially as a revolutionary socialist. But I want to suggest to you, looking at it, coming from a completely different angle, and looking at Karl Marx actually as an anthropologist, looking at him from that angle, Two things to begin with. First, you've got to realise that Marx was absolutely a very erudite bloke. He was an extremely voracious reader. He read practically everything. He really was. He not only was well-read in philosophy, history, economics, he was really into everything. He really was a very voracious reader. And he was also interested in literature. You know, he was also interested in literature. In fact, at one time, he thought of giving up writing the book on Capital because it was getting a bit too much. He's, you know, spending all these days in the British Museum, he thought. And he was going to write a book on Balzac. You know, he was going to actually write a book on the French novelist. So he was a very erudite scholar in many ways. And he was interested basically in everything. You know, he could actually quote Shakespeare and quote Goethe. You know, he was very much, very broad. He wasn't a sort of narrow economist. He was interested in most things. The other thing, he had a bad habit, like me. He used to annotate books, you know. He used to get all the books like this and scribble in the margins, you know, and underline things. He was always like that. And on everything he read, he used to take notes. He had all these notebooks he used to take. And if you look at all his notebooks, what you can understand that basically he was interested in anything to do with humans. Anything to do with the human condition, Marx was interested in. So in that sense, he was a kind of anthropologist. And all, you know, when you talk about the economic and philosophical manuscripts, these are actually his notebooks. He read all this stuff on, you know, Adam Smith and Hegel and whatnot, and just wrote his reflections on it and what he thought about them. So he wrote them. The other thing I think you need to remember about old Marx, why he was an anthropologist, he was very much in the tradition of the Enlightenment. Very much in the tradition of the Enlightenment. Okay, and he didn't agree with everything according to the Enlightenment. I mean, he didn't agree with their kind of mechanistic philosophy. He didn't agree with their idea of a kind of abstract individual. He was critical of many aspects of the Enlightenment, but he took most of the essential ideas from the Enlightenment. And there's three or four things about the Enlightenment. One is the notion that the world exists independent of humans. You know, the world's not a social construct. It exists independent of us and our representations of it. There's a real world out there. And in fact, anybody who doubts there's a real world actually is, you know, ought to go and see a therapist really, because the world has an objective reality. The second thing is the importance of reason, critical reason. Now, when people write, particular anthropologists, when they write about the Enlightenment, they tend to see the 18th century as the age of reason. You know, it's a complete misnomer. The Enlightenment wasn't the age of reason, because during the Enlightenment there was a critique of reason. There was an idea that you could not understand the world like, you know, the early people, like Leibniz and Descartes, that you could understand the world just by kind of thinking about it. Okay, so what the Enlightenment did is said the only way you can understand the world is not to deny reason. There's the importance of critical reason. You doubt everything. Kant sort of said, doubt everything, you know? So, you know, what is truth? What is knowledge? Well, you don't get knowledge from revelation. You don't get knowledge from tradition. You know, things are not right because my dad said so. You know, you have to critically approach things. And also, you have to use reason in a sense, in an empirical way. So the Enlightenment, and Marx followed this, what to understand the world, you have to combine reason with empirical knowledge. You know, there's a kind of tension there. There's all the time you do that kind of thing. So he's very much in the tradition of the Enlightenment. And in fact, there's one anthropologist who described that Marx was a child of the Enlightenment. You know, that was the kind of idea he got with the Enlightenment. Now, I'm going to try and suggest here that Marx was an anthropologist. So the first thing is, what is anthropology? Well, if you read old Kant, you know, I don't know if you know Kant, you know, very, very famous German philosopher. Now, just as Marx is often seen as an economist, and there's much more to Marx than being an economist, also the tendency to see, particularly amongst academics, is to see Immanuel Kant as being a philosopher. And sure enough, at the end of his life, he actually wrote some very famous philosophical texts, The Critique of Reason. You know, what is truth, and, you know, what is duty, and, you know, what is goodness, and all that. But you have to remember that Kant, like Marx, was interested in everything. He was really interested in the sciences. He spent most of his time, particularly his early life, studying science, not philosophy. He studied science. He was very, very keen on physical geography. And Kant was also, like Marx, an anthropologist. He actually wrote, he lectured on anthropology, Immanuel Kant, he lectured on anthropology for 20 years. And when he was my age, i.e. 75 odd years of age, he actually published a book called Anthropology from a Pragmatic Point of View. Okay, that was it, absolutely. So he defined, and what he defined anthropology of, anthropology is the study of humans. It's the study of what it means to be human. That's what anthropology, and that's what the term means in Greek. If you look at the Greek derivation of anthropology, it comes from the Greek word anthropos, which means humans, and logos means the study of, you know, the language, the reason for it. So anthropology means the study of humans. Okay, and that's what Marx followed that. He was an anthropologist because he essentially was interested in the human condition. He's not only interested in capitalism, he was interested in the human condition. What makes us human? You know, what is the meaning of human life? That was, so Marx and Kant. Of course, Kant was, people criticised Kant, particularly Herder, you know, who was his student. And Herder sort of said, oh, the trouble with Kant, he focuses all on reason and he focuses all on humanity, and Kant tends to forget the importance of language and the importance of culture and things like that. So, you know, but even Herder said, what philosophy should really be all about is being anthropology. You know, and philosophy shouldn't be a kind of speculative knowledge, but it should be an empirical study, you know, looking at the humanity. So Marx, Kant, Herder are all kind of founding figures of anthropology as a study of humans. Now, when you study humans, and a lot of Marxists have stressed this, okay, including Marx himself, as it were, when you look at the human condition and you look at humanity, there's a kind of tension. There's people, someone like Eric Fromm and Bruce Trigger, they talk about there's a kind of paradox in human life. There's a kind of tension. Because in a way, there's two aspects of being human. And they kind of don't seem to fit too tightly and too easily together. On the one hand, that humans are intrinsically a part of nature. Humans are organic beings, they're animals. They're part of nature, they're intrinsically linked to the natural world. Intrinsically. On the other hand, what's unique about humans, in a way, is they've got a very heightened sense of kind of reflective self-consciousness. They've developed language, and they've developed symbolic thought, and they've developed a very complex form of social life. So in a way, humans are intrinsically a part of nature, and at the same time, there's a sense in which we see ourselves as separate from nature. Okay? Now, what's interesting about Marx and his conceptions of anthropology, he always sort of emphasises that really to understand humans, you've got to hang on to both these sides. You must never forget that people are a part of nature, but you almost will realise, you know, there's a human nature. There's a sort of human species being where we're intrinsically kind of, in a way, separate from nature. And so our relationship with the world is always dialectical. You know, the world influences us, and at the same time, we influence and modify and change the world. And they write that. The other thing to remember, being in the Enlightenment tradition, Marx had the idea, essentially, that knowledge was something to be used. The book by Kant is called Anthropology from a Pragmatic Point of View. And what he means by pragmatism is the use of knowledge to enhance human freedom, the use of knowledge to make the world a better place to live in. And Marx follows that. He doesn't argue that knowledge is not important. He argues not only important, but he argues that knowledge, as it were, you know, empirical knowledge, rational knowledge, must always be linked to kind of, you know, make it, you know, there's that famous quote, you know, it's not just to understand the world, it's to change it. You know, that kind of idea. So that's by then. So what I want to do is suggest that Marx really is, you know, he's an anthropologist. But he's a particular kind of anthropologist in the sense he's a critical anthropologist, he's a materialist anthropologist, he's a dialectical anthropologist, and he's a humanistic anthropologist. He combines all these aspects together. You know, he combines all that. Now, what I want to do is suggest that Marx is an anthropologist. And to do that, I'm going to look at five concepts, five basic concepts, which come out of the Enlightenment. They come out of the Enlightenment. And they're basic concepts, really basic concepts. Although a lot of anthropologists and postmodernists want to get rid of them. Okay. But they're key concept for Marx, and they're key concept for most people, except postmodernists. Okay? One's the concept of nature. Two is the concept of society. Three is the concept of history. And four is the concept of science. Now, all these basic concepts come out of the Enlightenment. They're all embraced by Marx. He uses these concepts quite a lot. And I'll talk about his kind of how he envisioned his anthropology by looking at each of these four concepts. Okay? First of all, nature. Now, if you read the Paris manuscript, you realize that one thing he does argue very, very, very strongly, that humans are natural beings. That humans are organic beings. They're natural beings. They're natural beings. They've got certain dispositions. They've got certain powers. They're emotional beings. And he often talks a lot about that humans are sensual beings. They sense the world. They don't just intellectually see the world, they actually sense it. You know, that we're kind of, that the world is there, and we human beings are natural beings. We're organic beings. We're organic beings. He stresses that quite a lot, that essentially that we're natural beings. So when he starts to look at how we develop a kind of social science, he basically argues the first thing we start with, the basic premise, before we do anything else, we've got to realise that people are a part of nature. That is where we have to start with. To even exist, we have to relate to nature to produce food. That production and labour is the essential part of being human. You know, and that concept of labour. You know, when he talks about labour, he's not just talking about me working in April Foundry when I was 15. You know, he's not talking about, what he's talking about labour is the intrinsic and the productive relationship between humans and the natural world and how we produce life. And he makes this distinction between life and consciousness. You know, life and consciousness. And he always argues that life becomes before consciousness. And there's that famous quote, you know, life, I forget what it is. It's not consciousness produces life, but life produces consciousness. You know, that kind of, that idea, things like that. Of course, it's often been argued, as you probably know, it's a kind of economic determinist, really, that he's saying that production things, it's like that. What you always remember about Marx is a dialectical thinker. You know, he's not a one-sided, he doesn't say everything comes like that. He's much more, you know, he doesn't say, well, consciousness is not important, you know. Everything's life, everything's production, consciousness. He doesn't say that at all, because why would he write books if he thought consciousness wasn't important? You know, these things. But he basically argues you start basically from where we're at in terms of producing life through our interrelationship with nature. So that's the thing. But of course, although he argues very clearly that humans have a nature, he doesn't think of nature, human nature, as something that's fixed, that's something that's a kind of essence, that humans have got a kind of unchanging kind of essence. He doesn't argue that at all. He argues the opposite. That basically human nature is essentially historical, okay? And he talks about history as being the natural history of humans. The history itself is the natural. So what makes us human, actually, is not that we're just natural, but it's also that we actually are kind of a changing, where there's no essence. And I don't know if you know, you probably do, I don't need to tell all you lot either. But there's a very famous essay by his mate Engels. You know, I don't know if you know it. And it's called The Transition. I forgot what it is. It's The Transition from Ape to Man. Okay? I think you've got to remember as well, whenever they've translated Marx and Engels' work into English, they've often mistranslated it. That essay, From Ape to Man, actually, Marx and Engels always use I can't speak German. But I'm told that they always use the concept in German of Mensch, not man, not the German man. In other words, Mensch doesn't mean apes to man, it actually means apes to humanity. You know, it's a kind of, it's a gender neutral idea. Mensch means anthropos, humanity, stuff like that. But But if you read that Engels book for it, it's quite interesting. I mean, you know, some people say it's really dated now. I mean, in a sense, it's dated. I mean, somebody writing in the 1880s, you know, given all the changes in sort of paleontology and, you know, carbon dating and God knows what else has happened since, obviously. But the basic things that Engels was arguing is that human beings is a historical product. You know, we develop historically. Humans are not a kind of essence that we develop things. And things that Engels stresses, for instance, he stresses the fact that when humans became upright, you know, when we become bipedal, okay, as soon as we became upright, it freed the hands. It freed the hands, and when we got free hands, it enabled the dexterity of the hands, it enabled the brain to kind of develop, it enabled the people movements and the social life begins. It was the beginning of language. So what Engels argues that humans as a natural being have got all these various attributes, as it were. You know, the importance of language, the importance of the brain, the fact we've got this dexterity, and that our social life is complex, and all these are interrelated dialectically, you know? So the argument is we're basically natural beings, okay? But Marx always equally argues, that humans are social beings. That humans are intrinsically social. We're not just purely natural beings, we're also intrinsically social beings, okay? And we're social in many, many different ways. Even our perceptions of the world, even how we see the world, and this is something that anthropologists really got into, you know, in the 1930s and 40s, that we don't see the world in a kind of pristine way. We don't see the world as it is, really. I mean, it exists there, you know, it's real, but how we actually relate to it is always socially mediated, always socially mediated. The same with production. We relate to the world, we produce by our interactions with the world, but it's always social. It's always social. You know, you can't sort of say, well, on the one hand you relate to nature, and on the other hand you relate to humans, because Marx argues that these two aspects of the world are all intrinsically related, that our relationship with the world is always social. It's always social. It all involves other people, things like that. Okay? Now, when I was a student, and probably still is now, and if you read somebody like Anthony Giddens, you realise this. What Marx was the first person to really start to articulate is what is the relationship between social life, which is often referred to as structure, and human beings, which is often referred to in terms of agency, okay? So you've got this sort of structure agency, society, the individual kind of thing. Now, there's some people like Durkheim, some of these postmodernists, some of these anthropologists, they put all the emphasis on the social, you know? And old Durkheim, more or less, he talks about society, the social, is completely separate from individuals. He talks about it as sui generis. It has a life of its own, you know? And that if you read these postmodernists, they talk about, humans, they're just an effect. They're just an effect of discourses, you know? On the other hand, there are what often referred to as a methodological individualist, okay? Who say, well, society, I'll tell you who's famous for saying this, as you probably know, and I know you're all very sorry to hear it, but Maggie Thatcher died a few weeks ago or something. Okay, and she had this famous thing that was just single society, you know? She got this thing from Ayn Rand. There's nothing original about Margaret Thatcher. Nothing at all original. She got this idea there's no such thing as society, you know, from Ayn Rand, actually, okay? Who she was very keen on when she was in her 30s, okay? And, you know, and this is the idea, the only reality are individuals. The only human beings are real. The society, as it were, is not really real. And this is the thing somebody like Popper argues quite well. Popper argues this very really. The only real thing are individuals. Okay? Now, what's interesting about Marx, he criticises both, you know? On the one hand, he's got this famous quote, you know, that looking from the top down, he sort of said, oh, for goodness sake, and he uses the word history. He said, well, history doesn't create wealth, you know, history doesn't make wars, you know, it's not society that does all this, it's individuals that do it, you know, that individuals do all this. On the other hand, he kind of argues that, you know, You know, individuals always are social. The social always affects them, as it were, so the thing. And so what Marx does is criticizes both. He criticizes all those that put the emphasis on society and social life and ignore the individual. And he criticizes all those that put an emphasis on the individual and ignore the social. Okay? And he's particularly very, very keen to criticize all those people that put the emphasis solely on the individual. He's very, very keen. And some of the critiques are important. One is critique of Feuerbach. I don't know if you love Feuerbach. You know, Feuerbach was a sort of German philosopher writing in he was older than Marx, writing in the 1840s. And Feuerbach, you know, was very much anti-Hegel and stressing the importance of the individual. Kind of, he was like an existentialist, you know. Feuerbach. And Marx says to him, the trouble with him, with somebody like Feuerbach, he's got this abstract notion of the individual, separate things. I mean, there's that famous little quote that Marx says, that, you know, the humans are not just abstract individuals, and he talks about that an ensemble of relationships, that human beings are involved in relationships. And he criticizes also Stirner, who was a kind of very radical, he's very popular now, Stirner, you know, like Nietzsche, he's a very, very popular. You know, very strong individualism. You know, very, very radical, you know, that humanity doesn't exist, it's a spook. You know, the only thing that exists is the individual. And Marx criticizes it, you know. And he wrote that German ideology. Most of German ideology is a critique of old Stirner, you know, and said, you know, this is, you know, for goodness sake, humans are social beings. You know, even for Stirner to write his damn book, as it were, it depends on the German language, which he didn't invent. You know, how can he think he's a kind of unique individual that everything's coming from his own top of his own head kind of thing? I mean, he speaks German. Where did he get that from? You know, it's a social thing, that language, you know. So he's critiquing. And of course, the other group he criticizes very, very strongly is Ricardo and Adam Smith and the political economists. And his argument there that they've got a very abstract conception of the individual. They tend to see the individual as separate and radically distinct from social life. And he actually uses the expression that he calls them Robinsonades, you know? Robbie calls them, they're all Robinsonades. And you know where Robinson comes from? Was Robinson Crusoe. You know, this idea that, you know, he kind of argues that Adam Smith and that they see human beings as kind of Robinson Crusoe. They see them as isolated individuals, not social. You know, so he's very, very critical of all that. Right, that's society. Now, the next one, history. A lot of Marxists, particularly Marxists, okay, and there's a lot of books on sort of Marx and human nature and things like that. What they tend to say, what they've been arguing, what is fundamental about Marx, that he had a kind of, he saw a dialectical union between humans as natural beings and humans as social beings, okay? There's a kind of dialectic there. We're both social and we're both natural, okay? And you can't link it, okay? It's true. But there's another dimension to Marx. Marx was a revolutionary socialist, okay? And he recognised, of course, that humans were not only natural beings, they were not only social beings, but they were individual beings. And he talks a lot about the individuality of humans. And what he was, coming from the Enlightenment, what he was concerned about most was, in fact, you know, the freedom of the individual, to enable the individual to freely express themselves. Okay? So, in a way, with Marx, and a lot of later anthropologists, it's looking at human beings not in a kind of dualism, but looking at human beings in a kind of triad. When I was a student years ago, I read a little thing by an American anthropologist called Clive Kluckhohn, who wrote lots of books on the Navajo. Very interesting anthropologist. And in this, it's very simplistic, this, but actually it's quite an important truth, in a way, which Marx recognised. It's this. If you look at humans, there are some ways, if you just look at people, there are some ways in which they're the same as everybody else. There are some ways, when you look at humans, they're the same as everybody else. They've got two eyes and certain dispositions and things like that. You know, there's certain things that are universal about humans. Certain things we have in common as humans. You can also look at humans and think, oh, that's Jacqueline, and that's Dave, okay, and that's Mary, okay? We can also look at humans in a kind of see them as unique individuals, that they, like all organisms, all since Darwin, we realise this, all organisms are different. They're not identical, they all have different genes and whatnot. And you're looking at human beings that they're distinct. They have their own identity, they have their own kind of personality, that they're unique pieces. And the third way, Kluckholm argued, the third way of looking at human beings is to say, well, they have some things in common, and they have some things in unique, but they also have things that are like some people and not like some people. In other words, they have a social and cultural aspect to them, you know? So there's kind of three. And what Marx recognised were that human beings historically, there are three kind of historical processes which all humans are involved in. All humans are involved in three processes. One is kind of what biologists call phylogenetic, the processes whereby humans are kind of evolved. You know, and as human beings, we're part of that process, the process of the evolution of humans, okay? There's an what's often referred to as ontogenetic, okay? The looking at a person in terms of their life history, how their relationship with nature, their relationship with other beings, their relationship with social, that we all have a life history. We're all involved in a historical process where we develop. We're born, we go through all these processes, and we'll drop dead. Just like humanity itself. Humanity comes into being, it exists for 1,000 years like the dinosaurs, then it changes or it becomes extinct. Okay? And humans are exactly the same. There's that process. And the other process that, which is very fundamental for Marx, the other process that's important, is what he called history. The social historical process. And we're part of that too. Okay? So in other words, there's three parts to us, really. One, we have a human identity. Two, we have a self-identity. And three, we have a social identity. Of course, when Marx said we're an ensemble of social relations, it means we have all sorts of social identities. You know, somebody like me is a male, I'm a soldier of West Bromwich Albion, you know, I was born in the Black Country, you know, a British citizen, you know, there's lots of me in all these different ways. You know, Marx said, I'm an ensemble of social relationships, okay? And so I have a social identity, which is complex, okay? The important thing to realise, of course, that where Marx, he acknowledged we were human beings, he acknowledged actually that all people were social beings, but where he really put the emphasis was on individuality, on the importance of the individual human being, and the individual being. Nietzsche had the idea that somehow or other we've got to produce ourselves, we've got to create ourselves like a work of art, you know? Now Marx is in that tradition in a way. He's in that German tradition that comes from Goethe, that there's a self-development of the individual. You've got to be able to freely develop yourself, to freely kind of express yourself. And Marx stresses that you're everything. But unlike Nietzsche, and unlike Stirner, and all that lot, and a lot of philosophers now are into this, you know, there's no human nature, we can just create ourselves as we want. What Marx realised, you couldn't actually have your own self-development. You couldn't express yourself, actually, in a society where things were oppressive and controlling. And this is why he said to create a situation, well, not the way people are autonomous. Marx didn't think we were autonomous. You know, you're not like Sartre. We're not free in a kind of metaphysical sense. What Marx was interested in was social freedom, that we actually have to free to express ourselves. But he basically argued you could only do that. You could only do that by creating a society where you could be free. You know, you can't be free, you know, in a society where people are oppressed. You know, you can only express yourself really by creating, and this is why he was a socialist, basically. But he was a socialist because he believed in the human individual, you know? He believed in the human individual. The last thing, of course, is science. Now, in some ways, people argue that, Marx was a real scientist. In fact, he talked about science, as you know, he talked about scientific socialism, as opposed to all the kind of utopian things, you know, dreaming up a future society. Marx sort of said, you know, to have a future society, we've got to understand where we're at. You know, we've got to understand the conditions which we now have, as it were. Now, I'm sorry I'm going back a bit sometimes, because often I reflect on when I was a student teacher, you know, there was all these debates in Marxism between two interpretations of Marx, basically. Two kind of interpretations, what they thought Marx's anthropology was all about. Okay. There was one lot who were often referred to as the critical theorists, okay, or the Hegelian Marxists, okay? They basically argue that Marx really is a philosopher. He's a philosophical anthropologist in a way. Okay? They put a lot of emphasis on the young Marx. They put a lot of emphasis on Hegel. They put a lot of emphasis on history. They put a lot of emphasis on dialectics. And they hate Engels, you know, because they think Engels is scientific, you know, and he led poor old Marx astray, you know. So, and some of them are quite anti-science in a way. At least if they're not anti-science, they've got a bit of an aversion towards science. And they see themselves in the Germanic philosophical tradition that's coming from Hegel and things like that. And they see that what Marxist anthropology is all about really is freedom, you know? You know, the dignity of humans, the freedom of humans, that basically Marx was a humanist. Marx was an existentialist. And I don't know if you've ever seen the book by Eric Fromm. He wrote, he was one of the, in America, he was one of the first to edit Marx's philosophical manuscripts from 1844. And of course, what old dear old Fromm says, oh, well, you know, Marx is basically a humanistic sociology, he's kind of existentialist. Okay. So there's that approach to it. Okay. See him as mainly, you know, very historical, very interdialectical, the early Marx, philosophical, that thing. Then there's the other people, like Leslie White, who was an anthropologist, and like Althusser, who was a French philosopher. They kind of said, no. What Marx was all about, Marx created a new kind of science, a science of history. It created a new kind of social science. And he got rid of all that baggage about history and about dialectics and about Hegel, you know, and there was a real change. He had all that when he was a young lad, as it were, but then he started writing the book on Capital, okay, and he started to develop Marxism as a science. Started developing Marxism as a science, okay? And that kind of thing, okay? And they're quite keen on it. They're quite keen on Engels, but they don't like kind of, you know, Hegel very much, you know, and they don't like history very much, you know. And Leslie White, who was an American anthropologist, he said, oh, we should study social life and culture as if human beings did not exist, you know, a complete anti-humanist, you know. So the one's putting all the emphasis on humanism and the other's on the anti-humanism. As you realise, and as many people have argued, what is unique about Marx's anthropology, okay, he tried to put these two things together. In other words, he was a humanist, he put the emphasis on history, okay, he put the emphasis on dialectics, okay, and he was also scientific, he put the emphasis on materialism, okay, and he put the emphasis on science. In a way, and when his theory of history is often referred to as historical materialism, That basically expresses what he was at. He was at a kind of materialism, you know, and there's a little quote in the in Capital where he says the kind of mechanism material, you know, which had come from the environment, what was wrong about that it ignored the historical process. In other words, you couldn't have a materialism that ignored history, and you couldn't have a history that ignored things. So in a way, Marx is putting the two together, like a lot of some science apologists nowadays. In other words, they're trying to suggest the importance of history and the importance of empirism, the importance of hermeneutics and humanism, and also the importance of science. Okay, so it's a kind of humanistic, Marx's interest in a humanistic science. Just a last bit to finish, because otherwise I'll go on and on. A last bit to finish. When you look at Marx, there's two books that, you know, The Ordinary Republic, not you lot. The Ordinary Republic, when they think of Karl Marx, they think of two things, really. You know, one's the manifesto of the Communist Party, okay, and they think of Das Kapital. You know, that's it, that's Marx for them. Okay. The important thing about Marx, actually,
I mean, he wrote Das Kapital, and he was a revolutionary socialist. And he spent a lot of time studying capitalism. But you've got to realise he was a world historical thinker. He was a very insightful thinker. He was not only interested in studying capitalism, he was also interested in what is the origins of capitalism. He was also interested, because he was a political journalist and he wrote a lot on colonialism and on India, he was also interested in the, there's capitalism, which was just beginning in the 19th century, there's capitalism expanding, as it were. He was interested in what it was expanding in its relationship to other societies. So he was very, very interested in other, historically and ethnographically and anthropologically. He was interested not only in capitalism, he was interested in societies before capitalism, and he was interested in societies on the periphery of capitalism getting expanded. And he wrote a lot on such things like, primitive communism and the communal, tribal kind of societies. He wrote things about India and the Asiatic mode of production. He was interested in the Germans, and interested in Germanic kind of mode of production. He was very, very interested in the classical literature, particularly Rome, and the kind of what you call the antique kind of things. He was even interested in Russia, actually, about the Slavonic. So he had this concept of mode of production and looking at all these different things as a kind of historical context. And in his last years of his life, and this is in the 1870s, as it were, he really started writing notebooks, okay? And it was all on history and anthropology. And he was very, very keen, like Engels, on a chap was called Lewis Henry Morgan, okay? Who was an American lawyer who actually wrote some interesting books on kinship. He wrote some books on the Iroquois, and he wrote a lot of books on kind of social evolution. And Marx thought this was really interesting stuff. And so at the end of his life, he started what are now called ethnological notebooks. In other words, his anthropological notebooks. And there's only about a third, he wrote so much, there's only about a third of these notebooks that have ever been published, And they're called anthropological notebooks, because he was interested in all cultures, really. Okay. Now, he's up, like Morgan, he's often been identified with Morgan as having a very kind of unilineal form of history, a social evolution, that you had, first of all, you had, the tribal, and then you had the classical, and then you had the, feudal, and then finally you have sort of, something like that. But if you read Marx as well, Marx was a much more kind of open way of thinking, actually. And he didn't see that the social life just went from one stage to another. This is how somebody like Popper kind of interpreted. He thought about the laws of history, and he saw things going on, step by step in kind of stages. And it's quite clear when you read him about, that he saw things as much more complex than that. It's a kind of much more multi. There are lots of different ways and lots of different connections between all these different kinds. He was a historical thinker. He didn't see things in a kind of narrow way. Of course, when he was talking about laws of society, he was never interested in kind of social laws that apply to all history. When he was talking about laws and things like that, they were specific to capitalism. He was only talking about capitalism, So Popper in particular, his sort of criticism of the thing, I don't think sort of holds water, that's it. Now, a couple of years ago, I'm going to end, with a little quote on Marx. Because a couple of years ago, they did a reprint of the manifesto of the Communist Party. And I read a review, I think it was in The Guardian or it was in the Sunday Times or something. And he basically said, oh, Karl Marx, oh, for goodness sake, he's an intellectual relic, no importance whatsoever, forget him. Okay. And also sort of saying, what Marx is up to, it ends up with Stalinism, that's it, automatic link, as it were. And I just want to quote you, do a little quote, and it's actually by somebody, I don't know if you know that, there's a lot of kind of academics, particularly radical academics, and a lot of Marxists, as they get older, become more and more reactionary.
Yeah.
When I was at the College of Ed, my tutor used to say to me, he said, Brian, under 35, you're interested, the people are keen on social change, and over 35, they're interested in social control. And when you look at that, have a look at some real radicals, they often end up as neoconservatives and whatnot. And Sidney Hook was like that. He was in the 1930s and 40s, he was a really great scholar, and he was in America, you know. And to call yourself a communist in America, you know, even calling yourself an atheist in America, he's really, you know, you're in for trouble, you know, something. And in the 1930s one, of course, when it comes in the 1950s, he completely ended up. But I'm going to end it with a quote from old Sidney Hook. You know, he was a student of Dewey. And this is his answer to all these Americans who were saying he was a, you know, that Marx was a waste of time, you know. He said, and this is what he wrote: Marx was a democratic socialist, a secular humanist, and a fighter for human freedom. His words and actions breathe a commitment to a way of life and a critical independence completely at odds with the absolute rule of a one-party dictatorship of the United, of the Soviet Union, you know. But what I hope you've got a grasp of, that is not to see Marx just purely as an economist or purely as a thing. There were many, many sides to Marx, and one of the most important sides actually was being, he was an anthropologist. Not like most anthropologists. I mean, he didn't do any ethnography, you know, he didn't go off into the jungle somewhere and things like that. But if you read Capital, it's full of empirical stuff about women, you know, doing this and in factory thing. You've got a real good image of what life is like under capitalism, reading Capital. There's quite a lot of empirical stuff in it, you know. But basically, his kind of anthropology is critical, okay? It's historical, and it's dialectical, and of course, it's materialist. You know, he was very much a materialist sort of anthropology. Go. Okay.